Award-winning actress and filmmaker Isabella Rossellini takes inspiration from the natural world in her new theatrical lecture addressing the latest scientific discoveries about animal minds, intelligence, and emotions. It is titled Link Link Circus. With Pan, her trained dog, Rossellini transformed herself into Aristotle, Descartes, B.F. Skinner, and Charles Darwin to deliver a vivid monologue about the brilliance of the animal kingdom. Link Link Circus takes place Saturday, November 17th at 7:30 at Bard College's Fisher Center in Annandale-on-Hudson. Rossellini is an actress and model whose films include Blue Velvet, White Nights, and Death Becomes Her. It is a great pleasure to welcome Isabella Rossellini to the Roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, a delight to have you on the program. Let us talk about Link Link Circus and how you came to a lecture and ultimately a theatrical lecture about our wonderful animal kingdom.
Yeah, it is a theatrical lecture, but it's comical. In the last 10 years, I went back to university to study animal behavior and conservation, a subject that always fascinated me. And I started first by doing very short films for the Sundance Channel. Some of them were called Green Porno. Some of them were, another series was called Seduce Me. Another series was called Mamas. It was about reproductions, or it was about courtship strategies, or does the maternal instinct exist or not? And it was always comical, and they became quite popular on the internet. You can find them on YouTube or on the Sundance Channel. And that what inspired me to take it a step further and create comical monologues. So the first comical monologue I did was called Green Porno. It was about reproduction. And this one instead is about cognitive ability. Can animals feel and think? And so I asked my dog, Pan, to help me. Because, of course, it's easier to laugh about sex. It's harder to laugh about intelligence. My dog is there to entertain and seduce. And also we made it a little bit like a circus. Because for me, what I feel I am is mostly an entertainer. Who inspiration is the science, but most and above all, I'm an entertainer.
So to take that analogy a step further, that in the circus sense, you would be the ringleader to tell us these stories and to kind of bring everything into a context.
Yes, and I show, so it starts, you know, my dog and I are on, and there's also toys of mine when I was a little girl, and I have my friend Skylar Beeman, who is an actor, who also is the dog handler, help me make the toys come alive. We have puppets, so he's there also helping me with all of that. And also we have several short films that we've done and that would illustrate, occasionally I just show a film that illustrate my points.
What kind of dog is Pan?
So Pan was a dog that we rescued about a year ago from a pound in North Carolina. I contacted somebody called Bill Berlone, who trains dog for Broadway. I tried with my dog. I have a dog called Pinocchio, and I took him to, I was doing a presentation of one of my films in a cinema, and I took Pinocchio with me, and I told him to sit next to me. And of course, as soon as a person in the audience went, "Oh, what a nice little doggy," he just left me and went there with wagging the tail, then went up in the audience, said hello to everybody.
Yeah.
So I didn't know, though I trained dog, and I volunteered for the Guide Dog Foundation, and I've trained dog all my life. I didn't know how to make them not respond to a friendly audience. And so Bill came to me, and Bill said, "We have to find the dog that has the talent to be an actress." And the talent to be an actress in the dog consists on not being afraid of crowds, but also ignore them. So the dog is very, very, Pam always looks at me or at Skylar, the actor is in stage with me. She's very concentrated on us, and she's not afraid of lights, big voices, because we have microphones, puppeteers moving around. She's completely calm and also very, very joyful. She's a very playful little doggy. So whenever she knows we have a routine before we start the show, and she knows that that means that the show is about to start, she goes crazy. She's so happy.
So in other words, you really cast this role of of Pan. So does that mean that Pan is less of a pet and more of a colleague?
Yes, we're both. She's both. So we rescued her because Bill Berlone only works with rescue dogs. So she was removed from a home. Somebody saw the dog being beaten. And so we took the dog. Bill selected the dog. I think all these dog trainers, whether they work for service dog or police dog or dog that sniffs the drugs or dog for theater, they have their own contact, and they call all the pound, and they know what personality you need to have to fulfill whatever duty or whatever you want the dogs to do. So I wanted a dog that was small enough so she could travel with me. We just came back from touring 9 countries in Europe, and I wanted the dog to always be able to be in the cabin with me, not to go, you know, with the luggage underneath. And so she's very small. She's a mutt. We think she's about 4 years old. And I wanted to have floppy ears, patchy coat, and curly tail, because these three things, incredibly enough, they're signs of domestication. If you look at all the canids in the wild, whether they're wolves, coyote, foxes, they always have straight ears. But somehow, as you domesticate the animal, the ears come down. And also patchy coats is a sign of domestication. If you think of goat, and if you think of cows, they can have these black and white patches. But the wild cousins are always brown or black. So we don't know exactly why this happens. And, you know, genetics probably will give us an answer. But we do know that when we look at hoofed animals that are domesticated, like goats and cows, they have patches in their coats. And if you look at buffaloes or deer or, you know, their cousin in the wild, they are not. And also that's true for dogs, also the floppy ears. Floppy ears is a sign of domestication. So Pan has floppy ears. She has patchy coat, black, white, and brown. And a little curly tail. Also, curly tail is a sign of domestication.
Very, very cute, a beautiful dog. I've only seen it in the press pictures, but a beautiful, beautiful dog. Now, let me ask you, you mentioned toys from your childhood that make their way onto the stage. Does that give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your upbringing?
Not really. I don't talk about it I just thought that I played, and I played with some of the toys are my authentic toys of my childhood, and some we bought some toys from the 50s and 60s where I grew up. But no, I don't talk about my childhood. I mean, if you are talking about, because I have a very famous parent, so I don't know if you're referring to them. I don't really talk about them. I do talk about jokingly, but I say it with a straight face that I gave a funeral to my mother's fur coat, and there is a photo of my mom with a fur coat, but I haven't really. Just an exaggeration to make fun of myself and my love for animals.
Your mother, of course, being Ingrid Bergman, and your father being the great Italian director Roberto Rossellini. So less about that was I interested in the fact of that the idea of playing and growing up of just the idea of you having sort of a normal childhood.
It's hard. You know, I did have a normal childhood. I guess, you know, I, first of all, we grew up in Europe.
Yeah.
And, so the movie stars, my mom was a very big movie star in Hollywood. But in Europe, they love the actors, but they don't have the same status as there is in America, where there is a real, you know, if you're a movie star, you can't even walk in the streets. My mom could still walk in the street and have a normal life. In Europe, it's less frenzy about celebrities. And then I really, frankly, I don't know. You know, I don't know what normal is. For me, it was normal, but I don't know. I never grew up with anybody else, so I don't know. I don't know what it would be. But we went to school, and we had family reunion, and you know, it was sometimes Mama might have some paparazzi following her, and I always felt very protective of her. She didn't like it. She liked her privacy, and so it pained her to be persecuted by paparazzi, so still today I have an antipathy for them.
Certainly.
Because I felt protective of my mom. But otherwise, life was pretty normal, I think.
Were animals a part of your childhood?
Yes, very much so. You know, I mean, I live in the country, too, and we lived between the country and the city. But the in Europe, still today, I mean, sometimes there are these mega cities like New York, you know, London is one of them, Paris is becoming one of them. But we grew up mostly in Rome, and in Rome there was really the center of the city, the cities, and then immediately the countryside. So there was a very, not only we had pets and dogs and cats at home, but also chickens and pigs and goats and sheep. It was really very accessible. And, you know, we had, we went to the farmer's market, but also we would know some people that raised chickens, so we would get our own chickens, our own pigs. That was very common. Now it's changing. It's all industrialized, and we have supermarkets. But so before it was much more closed life between the country and the city. And I had thought about studying agriculture and but at the time, everybody was leaving the small farms. You know, it was really the beginning of this industrial farming. And so I didn't think I would have any future in working in a farm. And so I stayed in the family business of filmmaking.
Of course. Did modeling come before filmmaking?
Yes, modeling came before. I started first to do comical interview for the Italian television. I work with Roberto Benigni, you know, from Life is Beautiful,
yes,
the film that a few years ago won many Oscars. And so we started together when we were 19. So we worked for 3 or 4 years together in comedy shows. And then I was noticed on television and asked to become a model, and I started to model, and that was a huge career that also allowed me to remain in America. I was already studying here and working some, but then of course New York, because you know it's a capital of fashion, and so I continue to live permanently here. And I, at first, I was a little bit, see, oh, here, there they are, there are my dogs.
There they are.
There they are.
Making their entrance.
So, yeah. So, you know, at first, because my family was so celebrated, was so celebrated as filmmakers, I was intimidated to be an actress. But then after modeling, that gave me courage. Not only modeling, it's similar, you know, it still is about emotion in front of the camera. You may not have a dialogue, but you still have to have emotion. And so when I became a successful model, and most of all, I enjoyed it, I thought, oh, yeah, no, I can be an actress. I don't want to be an actress just because I'm afraid, because Mama was so successful. But I have it in me, at least a love for it.
This is a very direct question, and you certainly can choose not to answer it. But I could probably see Blue Velvet another 20 times and still not understand it. I try. I just don't always.
You don't have to understand.
I don't always succeed.
No, so I'll explain it to you.
Okay.
I wouldn't give it. If you go to see Picasso, or if you go to see De Kooning, you don't say, what is it?
No.
You know, it's not, it's an abstract art. Well, David Lynch is a little bit the De Kooning or the Francis Bacon or of films. He deals with emotion, but not narrative. So for him, it's more important. And if you see Blue Velvet, it's full of atmosphere, it's full of mood, and yet you don't really understand it. That's what sets the point. He always says to me, what I'm trying to capture is I enter into a room, and the moment I enter into a room, I know that there is tension, or I know it's friendly. How do I know that? I don't know. I don't know the people, and yet there is an atmosphere. What I'm trying to capture is this mood, this not associated with a narrative that explains all. And I remember one day he said to me, when I kept saying the same thing you're saying, I don't understand it. He said, why, do you understand life? He did have a point. So his films are really to enjoy more as a mystery, as moods, and you don't really totally understand the story. You understand there is possibilities. like you understand in Blue Velvet, that my character is probably an abused woman. But you never really see the scenes where she is abused. Yes, you see a ritualistic rape, and you understand that probably, but you understand there's more of that. But not all of it is explained. You just see that she is going crazy.
Now, this was the question I said that you could do away with if you want to. But it would seem to me that given those disturbing elements that you just described of the film, and there are disturbing elements in the film, that for you as an actress, would you have been able to do those if you were not in a relationship with the creator of that film? In the sense
of first of all, I wasn't in a relationship with David Lynch. After the film, David and I became a couple, but we were not in a relationship. We got to know each other while making the film. So I wasn't hired because I was his girlfriend or anything. I lived in Italy during very difficult years. With Italy, we had the Red Brigade. It was a terrorist group, and a lot of people were kidnapped, and we became very familiar with the Stockholm syndrome. This is when victim become accomplice, if you want, accomplice, and in quote, of their own, the people that are tormenting them. And of course, we were not aware of this. I mean, you had a similar story in America with Patricia Hearst, you know, when she it was unclear what had happened to her, but it's part of this incredible manipulation where people completely lose themselves. So when I read David's script, to me, it was the story of an abused woman. I mean, my character. The story is about a young boy who investigates on his own a murder and finds the dark aspects of life. And one of them is this abused woman who's also a nightclub singer. So I thought the role was wonderful. At the time, we didn't really talk much about women abused and how women, sometimes when they are abused, they're having a very hard time disregarding themselves from the situation because it's part of the illness, isn't it? So I thought the role was fascinating.
Oh, it is a fascinating role. And I assume, do you still talk about it? I mean, when you were talking a moment ago about going to present films, do you still do events with it?
Yes, you know, incredibly, when the film came out, it was very controversial, but I would say the very influential critic like Pauline Kael liked it a lot, and that gave us a lot of, she understood that it was about, because people were confused what was the film about. Her very good review helped the film create an audience, and an audience that looked at it as a serious piece of art. And actually, a few years ago, it was the 30th anniversary of Blue Velvet, and I was delighted that the Museum of Modern Art in New York had a special screening. So I was vindicated, because when it came out and we got bad reviews, some people criticized it and it was controversial. It was painful, and I felt bad because I thought that maybe I was unable to convey the idea that this was an abused woman. Now it's all understood, and the film is considered a classic, so I'm delighted. And David Lynch is considered a great artist.
And yes, it's a beautiful thing to be associated with. Link Link Circus is coming to Bard's Fisher Center. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you transform yourself in this. There Aristotle, Descartes, Skinner, Darwin, you are able to embody these greats.
I talk a little bit about them. I talk a little bit about the history. I mean, this question, do animals feel and think? It's something that we've asked throughout the century, and we gave different answers. So I do illustrate some of these different philosophical answers. And some of them, they are my crazy short comical films that are about 2 minutes long, where I play different characters, including some animals. I play a piping plover. I play a wolf. So it's not only humans that I play.
You play a wolf. That sounds fun. And in the end, we learn, do you think we take out what? I mean, I've always
said... I see myself as an entertainer.
Yes.
But I also think that the things that are really wonderfully entertained, they also have some serious basis. It's not just a joke. So I really want, I always say, I want my audience to go, like in a second thought say, oh, I didn't know that about domestication of the animals, or I didn't know that aspect of evolution, or I didn't know that scientists proven that animals are able to hold concept in their head, or there are some experiment that they've done with birds, and they've proven that bird songs have accents, so birds can tell when another bird sings which forest it comes from, exactly like we would speak English differently if we came from England or Australia or America. So I want them, I present these things hopefully in a funny way that makes people laugh, and a lot of children also come to my show. And then people, the biggest compliment is that, oh, I didn't know that. That's fascinating. That's the biggest compliment. But it's all presented funny. That to me is very important.
Isabella Rossellini's Link Link Circus takes place on Saturday, the 17th of November at 7:30 at Bard College's Fisher Center in Annandale-on-Hudson. Fishercenter.bard.edu for more information. Fishercenter.bard.edu. Isabella Rossellini, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Have a wonderful event on the 17th, and thank you so much for sharing with
us. Thank you so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Link Link Circus takes place Saturday, November 17th at 7:30 at Bard College's Fisher Center. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.